A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is 14 January 2021, Thursday class. So we shall continue from where we stopped. We are at page 84 of this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning. We are using this book because the teaching is based on the adapted verses of the Sutra of Infinite. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention. Then we can start our meditation. We shall have our usual half an hour awareness-based meditation. Okay? We are off the light now. Then you can commence your meditation. Always remember to relax completely body and mind. Relax means completely at ease, don't do anything. Maintain a silent mind. When you are silent without thought, you are just aware. So relax, maintain awareness. Means silent your mind, don't do anything, just maintain awareness. Whatever arises, away, finish. Don't follow. Just maintain awareness. Means the bright, clear mind that is aware without thought. Then stabilize the awareness. The third support is to maintain the awareness for as long as you can to stabilize it. And the fourth support is, of course, Trust your nature to do. That one you do later. Initially, just learn how to relax. The whole process is very, very deep. To be able to completely relax body and mind is not easy. You have to try it out. Develop it. Then maintain awareness. That one you have to actually develop the understanding of what the awareness is. When you are without thought, completely silent, there is awareness. When you are just aware, before the knowing, before the thinking. So don't try to think, don't try to know. Whatever thought that arises, that is based on your habitual tendency, heedless thinking. And when your spiritual faculties are not stable, especially your sati, then thinking can arise, thought can arise, because thought are mainly respond to memory. Whatever memory you hold on to, you cling on to, it gives rise to thinking. The thought process, they arise very fast. So if you are heedless without a stable mindfulness or awareness within, you cannot cope. You cannot deal with the thought process. So meditation is a very good way to train your mind to maintain this silence within, this awareness nature, stabilize it, and use it to meditate. Use it to develop wisdom and understanding. Okay, they fall the stream of great vehicle to nourish sentient beings. They spread the seeds of goodness over the field of merits and virtue. So this is the subheading that they extracted from the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, chapter 1 on virtue. So pouring the stream of the great vehicle, the meaning is very deep and very beautiful. Great vehicle means the Mahayana tradition. So this is the great vehicle because they strive on to develop the perfection, the 10 perfection to become Sammasambuddha. They walk the path of the Bodhisattva way to become Sammasambuddha. So these are great beings, great cultivators. These are the great vehicle. They are not the same as the smaller vehicle, or they call it the sainthood way. The sainthood way are a lot easier. So if you want to cultivate sainthood way, most of the Theravada teaching, they are more than enough. But if you want to move on to the great vehicle to become Sammasambuddha, you need to expand on the cultivation of the 10 perfection that the Buddha mentioned casually in the Theravada teaching. The Mahayana teaching went into great detail as to how the Bodhisattva path can be tracked, can be developed until full perfection to become Sammasambuddha. So to do that, we need the Mahayana teaching or the teaching of the greater vehicle. That's the reason why here the author wrote, pouring the stream of the great vehicle to nourish sentient beings. This one is very meaningful. This means that the Dhamma has already slowly entered and accumulated in our minds, in the mind of sentient beings. It is not just falling, drops of dew. Without realizing it, Dhamma water has not just nourished our mind, but has also gathered into a clear stream, which then issues forth, just like the water that gathers in the high mountains and flow down to the rivers or the valleys below. This water can then irrigate the field and nourish just the crop. And all those downstream can make use of this essential commodity, which is water. Without water, a human being cannot survive. We will die. As I, water is very important. We do not see the importance of this commodity, water, until when you are short of water. When there is water cut for us in Selangor, I think it's quite common. It actually costs many residents, businesses, to have a lot of inconvenience. Not only you cannot have proper supply to do business, even within the residential home, if you have quite a big family or your house is rented out to quite a number of tenants, you will have problem even taking bath. There may not be enough water for you to take bath. Not to say flush your toilets, it's even more difficult. Then a lot of things need water, washing, cleaning, cooking, and even tending to your plants. They need water. Then when you need to clean your car, wash your car, or wash any part within your home, you need water. So water is of great importance and significance. So here the analogy which the sutta uses is very good. It's like this water is Dhamma water. And because it's Dhamma water, it can actually supply. This means that the Dhamma has already slowly entered and accumulated in our mind, the minds of sentient beings. So it's not just falling drops of dew. Without our realizing it, Dhamma water has not just nourished our mind, but has also gathered into a clear stream, which then issue forth, just like the water that gathers in the high mountains and flow down to the valley below. This water can then irrigate the field and nourish the crops. We can add in, can be used by sentient beings for their needs. And we can really use water efficiently if we really have the understanding. So sometimes we need to collect rainwater is because we know how to make use of rainwater. When you collect rainwater, actually you are doing the area some goodness, because you have to retain some water within your home. Otherwise, all this water nowadays, being a civil engineer, I understand, because our development has developed a lot of concrete drains, and most of the surface of developed cities or residences, they have a lot of concrete surface. Even our road has been tar, so the surface runoff is not much. In fact, most of the water, they will not seep into the ground. They will run off very fast through the drainage system and also all the concrete surfaces or tar road. So this will cause flooding during flash flood or sudden torrential downpour. In the olden days, when there is less development, most of the water that actually pour down, about 30-40% goes underground, seep into the surface because of the grass, the soil and all those things. But nowadays, concrete surface, they got no chance to seep into the ground. Most of the surface are concrete. So almost 90% they just go into the drain and find its way into the river, and very fast. There is no time delay at all. That's why our river get inundated very fast. Then it overflow the bank, river banks. Then it cause local flooding and all this thing. So rainwater harvesting is really useful. If we can practice this, it will actually help out. Otherwise, the engineer had to look for land, big piece of land, to build retention pond to retain the water during heavy downpour, then slowly release it after the rain. So it's just like damming up some of the water. Okay, we will move on and continue your sharing. Therefore, the principles of cultivating the fields of our mind are the same as though for cultivating the land. So this analogy is pretty good. We often use the analogy, the Dhamma is like water. The field of our mind needs to be nourished by Dhamma water, otherwise it becomes barren, which can then form pure streams that nourish sentient beings. Initially, small drops of dew can only nurture small grasses and flowers, or small area of grassland. But as they gradually gather together, they are sufficient to nurture mighty trees. These large trees absorb the abundant moisture, then naturally releases it into the atmosphere, where it falls as rain. To nurture the entire land in this way, all things support and complement each other. This describes how pouring the stream of great vehicle can happen in all places and at all times. Aside from being a school of teachings, the great vehicle can also refer to superior capabilities and wisdom. When those with superior capabilities and wisdom encounters the Dhamma, they immediately take it in and apply it, which can bring about a great impact. This is very true. Right? Then spreading the seeds of goodness. This one is a very skillful way of imparting the Dhamma. Then let sentient being develop the understanding.
One
line. We need to mute one more. Somebody unmute again. Never mind. You have to be careful. Sometimes you accidentally unmute. Okay, I'll read on. Spreading the seed of goodness means sowing Bodhi seeds or seeds of enlightenment in the field of our mind. When Dhamma water saturates the field in our mind, it nurtures these seeds of goodness and helps them sprout and grow strong. By unceasingly sowing the seed of goodness, with each of these seeds give rise to an infinite number of seeds. An infinite number of seeds arising from each of these seeds, we create an endless cycle of goodness. In this way, field of merits and virtue will appear everywhere. This will then develop into Bodhi forest. Analogy is very good. Forests conserve and protect the water, and the field sustain the water level so that a stream can issue forth to nurture other fields. So this is a very good way of describing it. All of this require the gathering of the love and energy of many people. Very true. To do this work, you need people who have the understanding of the Dhamma, the training. And these are the people who have the skill, the wisdom, the love, the compassion. And because of their vow, the four basic vow of the great bodhisattvas, the great beings. They vow to take across the limitless sentient beings throughout the universe. And they vow to severe and develop all the understanding to endure all affliction and suffering. Then they vow to fathom and perfect all wisdom, leading to the perfection of wisdom. Because without all this vow, they cannot do their work. And finally, they vow to cultivate and perfect the 10 perfection, accumulating to become Sammasambuddha. So that is the greatness of the vow. The vows are very heavy, and it takes long period to fulfill. But being great beings, they are ready for all this, and they understand what these are. Especially the great beings who have finished off the cultivation to a great extent. There are 5 stages of Bodhi mind development training. You can finish off the 3rd stage of Bodhi mind development, means you can realize the nature, illuminate that nature very clearly. You already very advanced in the training and you can do the work. And after that, you can move on to stage 4, which is the Bodhi mind that renounces samsara. So this is very beautiful. Okay, we go on. All of this require the gathering of love and energy of many people. So this is very true. You need a lot of this great beings or sentient beings to come as bodhisattvas to do this work. Many things cannot be accomplished by a single person alone. Just as water and soil cannot be protected by a single tree, that tree must develop flowers and fruits which then produce seed that are spread across the land. From these seeds, the entire forest can grow. It in turn nurture the land and continue the cycle. Likewise, we need to spread the seed of goodness or wholesomeness so that they can grow into a Bodhi forest that nurtures the merits and virtues of the fields of merit. So these are very meaningful and beautiful verses. If the field of our mind is filled with affliction, this one is very dangerous. You carry with you all of your affliction, suffering, misery, remorse, sorrow and lamentation, fear, anxiety, insecurity, phobia. And they will really cause you a lot of suffering. Your mind will be afflicted. So if the field of our mind are filled with affliction, even if we have the karmic condition to hear the Dhamma and be nourished by Dhamma water, this Dhamma water will be absorbed by this affliction. It cannot go in. It cannot help you. Because when people's minds are afflicted, it means they don't have the understanding. They don't have Dhamma understanding. They don't have parami. They don't have virtue. They are not able to understand things. That's why they become heedless. And they suffer. So I will read again. This Dhamma water will not be absorbed because the affliction actually prevents you from receiving them. And these afflictions are like weeds that prevent us from developing wisdom or seeing the truth. Within each of our mind, there is a field of blessing with a bounty of seed. We only lack a good farmer to guide us through the step of tilling the land. This is a very good analogy. Sowing the seed, transplanting the seedling, weeding, spreading, fertilizer, irrigating, etc. If we receive this guidance and make an effort to tend the field of our mind, then we can reap plentiful of harvest, good and beautiful harvest. Everyone innately has wisdom, but this wisdom has been covered by ignorance to the point where we no longer accept and absorb the Dhamma that can awaken our wisdom. So this part may be not easy for most people to understand. When the author say everyone innately has wisdom, this one actually refer to our true nature. Our true nature is without ignorance. But then, if you don't know how to meditate and develop the ability to connect to our true nature, you cannot really develop the cultivation. Because even though it's there, but due to delusion, ignorance, your mind is being clouded. It's that true mind, that true nature within is being clouded by your wrong view, your wrong thought, by your emotion, your afflictions, mental hindrances. So that is the reason why the author say, even though within each of us, we already have the inner wisdom. So even though everyone innately has wisdom, but our wisdom has been covered by ignorance to the point where we no longer accept and absorb the Dhamma that can awaken our wisdom. So this is what the author meant. Huh? We need spiritual friends to guide us. This is very true. This is the first step of the Avijja Sutta, the sequence, the enlightenment sequence, the 10 steps. The first step is to have genuine spiritual friends, Dhamma friends, Kalyana Mitas, to guide us with their wisdom in order for these seeds of goodness or wholesomeness to sprout in the field of our mind. So without wisdom, without understanding, sentient being will develop affliction. But this wisdom and understanding is not easy to have. Without the sasana, without the Buddha's sasana, means his essential Dhamma, his teaching, the Four Noble Truths, sentient being is like blind, deluded. So it's not easy to receive the teaching, the Dhamma. And you need enlightened beings, great beings, or the great vehicle to really teach and share. Although some of the lesser vehicle cultivator that has developed the sainthood way of enlightenment up to arahantship or even Pichika Buddha, they can teach. But their teachings are quite limited in that sense, because they cannot teach you the vehicle of the greater way, the Bodhisattva way. They can share with you the essential Dhamma to liberate your mind, to free your mind. So in order to receive this teaching, you must have parami. You must have affinity, the triple gem. That's the reason why, if you were to look at the teachings, how the Buddha actually structured his teaching, it's very beautiful. Yeah. All of our sessions and classes since the time of the Buddha, it starts with the pre-puja. And the pre-puja is very important. The pre-puja is the starting point. To receive this teaching, you must have affinity with the triple gem, the Buddha knew. Without the triple gem, you cannot find his teaching, you cannot find the way. There is no Dhamma. So taking refuge in the triple gem is to create affinity with the triple gem. And like the Buddha always reminded the monk, there is no other refuge safe except the triple gem. Because it's only in the triple gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, you can find his teaching, the real teaching. So taking refuge is a serious matter. That's why we start by chanting the salutation to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. The meaning is very beautiful. Namo is homage to the tassa, to the. So namo tassa bhagavato. Bhagavato is the Buddha. So when you recite, means you recite the salutation to the Buddha. Homage to the blessed one, Bhagavato. Arahato, he is the Arahant. Sammasambuddha. So this recitation and salutation is very, very wholesome, meritorious. That's why we start by reciting. So this Namo Tassa, a lot of people don't really know the meaning. They just recite because it has been advised. And even the kindergarten school, Sunday school kids, they also know how to recite. So the meaning is very deep. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddha. So sammasambuddha is sammasambuddha. Then after that, you take refuge straight away. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami. Then you repeat. Why do you repeat? For the second time, you take refuge because you are serious. Then for the third time, you take refuge. So refuge here, the meaning is very deep. When you take refuge means you really create affinity with the Triple Gem. And you really have faith in the Triple Gem. You take refuge means like you surrender yourself and go under their protection. You will learn this teaching, cultivate this teaching, and liberate your mind. Because this is the only refuge safe. You don't go to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha for refuge. There is no refuge safe here. You can't find the teaching. So this teaching is a source of wisdom. And without wisdom, there is no virtue. So wisdom and virtue is a source of good life, goodness, wholesomeness. And that's how we change our life, transform our life for the better. So without the Dhamma, it's very difficult. Then after that, the first thing the Buddha asks you to do is, after taking refuge, to renew your precepts. Yeah, this is based on his advice. The first advice, to avoid all evil. How do you avoid evil? What constitutes evil? That's why the teaching is very clear. But few people understand what constitutes evil. The three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion constitute evil. And how do we avoid evil? Means avoid giving rise to the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And how do we do that? The Buddha reflected, contemplated, and came up with the five precepts. Because when you violate these five precepts, it constitutes major evil. We can investigate and check out the precepts. Take for example the first precept. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. What does it mean? I undertake the training rules to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. Why must I take this precept? You should inquire. Why did the Buddha say I have to undertake the training rule to abstain from causing harm or killing of fellow living beings. So when we reflect and contemplate, who are the people who will kill and harm others? And then we have the answer. Only deluded people, selfish people, violent people, emotional people, they can kill and harm because of motive, because of violent nature, emotion, and also selfishness. So all this point towards an evil person. So if you break this precept, violate this precept, you have the three evil roots of greed or selfishness, anger, emotion, or violent character and delusion. That's why it constitutes major evil. If you don't keep this precept, the Buddha said, you reap what you sow. This is the karmic law, the moral causation. So if you cause harm, you cause misery, or you kill fellow sentient beings or living beings, you reap what you sow, in future you will be harmed, you will be killed, you will be made miserable, you become the victim. Is that what you want? Your life, you decide. If that is not what you want, you better wake up and keep this precept so that you never violate this precept. And you can ask the Kayamita for those who have already went into the cultivation. After a while, they realize when you keep your precept clean, your life changes, you become beautiful. I always share this, keeping precept is like wearing mask. Now pandemic, COVID-19, you understand. When you wear mask means what? You not only protect yourself from receiving this COVID-19 virus contact, but at the same time, you prevent others from being affected by you or contagious. So the mask actually help to protect both yourself and others. So if everybody wear mask and follow the SOP, the chances of it spreading is very much reduced. So keeping precept has some of this similarity. When I keep precepts means I don't harm others. But at the same time, when I don't harm others, means I'm not committing evil. I take care of my karma. So when I take care of my karma take care of my life. I will not become victim to reap all this negativity of action, speech, and thought that my nature might have inflicted on other people if I had not kept these precepts. So if you check the other precepts, they are the same. The second precept is the same. So this second precept is I undertake the training rule to abstain from stealing or taking things that don't belong to me. So if you do that, you will be virtuous. You will not lose things. You will not become the victim. You will not confront people who deceive, cheat, and scam you because you have not done this to other people. But if you have been doing all this nonsense through selfishness, through greed, through evil intent, through delusion, then this precept, when you violate, it creates major evil. Karma-wise, you will become victim later on. People will harm you, cheat you, deceive you, scam you, and do all those things back to you. Even you go and see all those doctors, you will visit all those that is not ethical, who also have selfish intent behind. Then you will also meet up with all those bogus people who cheat and scam. Especially those who visit medium superstition, honestly. You don't have the good karma, I tell you. You will end up reaping what you sow in the past. So the third precept, as we all know, is abstain from sexual misconduct. That one is very important to preserve the sanctity of our marriage relationship. To actually avoid harming people, contacting with unnecessary type of disease. So there is a reason why this precept is important. Only selfish people with a lot of craving and desire or lust will break the precept. Delude the people who didn't really care about their family unit, their family members. They only think of their selfish intent, their lust, their desire. Then the fourth precept, as we all know, abstain from telling lies or avoid arising the four type of wrong speech. What are the four type of wrong speech? Speak harshly, harsh and violent speeches. Yeah. And of course, lying. When you lie, means you have evil intent, or there are certain advantages or benefits that you dare not let people know. That's why you lie. You dare not speak the truth. Then the third wrong speech is you get yourself involved with negativity or backbiting, saying negative thing behind people's back, or they say patu api, put forth, instigating people. All these are wrong speech. And of course, the last one is, although people take it lightly, it's also pretty serious if you understand the effect. To speak frivolously, frivolous speech, you think it's frivolous, not important, you simply say, but sometimes it hurts and it can cause a lot of misunderstanding or repercussion to what you say. You may not have the ill intent, but because of your carelessness, frivolously you speak them. Then the word reach the ears of people who are not supposed to hear. Then you get yourself into big trouble. So precepts are very important. That's why all these other teachings. So the fifth precept is also very important. We undertake the training rule to abstain from partaking intoxicants, drugs, alcohol, etc. that cause our mind state, our consciousness to be low, to be affected. So when you do this, the danger is you lost your ability to be aware. And when you lost your ability to be aware, you become heedless. You sometimes simply do things without knowing, because those under the influence of drugs and alcohol, their consciousness can become unconscious, lapse into moments of unconscious. Then they simply do things. Then there is this possibility that you may violate all the other first four precepts. That's why it's very serious. So the teachings that follow is very beautiful. Eh? You chant the salutation to the Buddha. Then for us, we chant the salutation not only to the Buddha, to all the great beings. Then after that, we take refuge. Then we renew our precepts. Then after that, actually, there is normally the puja offering where we develop rejoicing, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we also do it mindfully. Then we pay respect to Triple Jam. It's also a meritorious action. Then later on, we conclude by paying respect to Triple Jam again. And this is very wholesome. Then after that, we start our session, our sharing. This is listening to the Dhamma, the key for truth, the meritorious action. Then you rejoice, also meritorious action. Then you straighten your view, it's also meritorious action. Then those who help organize all this, they provide service to notify people to attend and all those things. Then there is also what they call the closing puja, where we share merit, transfer merits, we make aspiration, we invoke power of merits for certain wholesomeness and goodness. So So this is how the 10 meritorious action all can be cultivated. A lot of wholesomeness and goodness can be developed. Yes, through all this Dhamma session that the Buddha has recommended. You go to the temple, is the same. So that constitutes the second advice of the Buddha. First is to avoid all evil through keeping the precept and understanding what constitutes evil. Then after that, cultivate wholesomeness. And when you follow the advice of the Buddha to attend Dhamma session, come into contact with true Kayamitas, then you will have opportunity to learn from them, to constantly listen to the true Dhamma, the true teaching. Then all the 10 meritorious actions, you get to develop them, cultivate them. So even you have condition to make offering, donation, puja offering, and various type of donation towards the sasana for the benefit of the society or the grouping that develop this Dhamma activity, spiritual activity, then all this sharing become very beautiful. So you do dana, you keep your precept, is also meritorious action. Making offering is also meritorious. Then we sometimes also meditate. Now our session we meditate, and there is also meritorious action. So when all the 10 meritorious action you get to perform and develop, which means all this sharing is very, very beautiful and very important. It can help the cultivator to really progress, to develop the spiritual faculty, the faith, to understand the teaching, the significance of all this puja offering, like the offering of flour, clear water, fruits, incense, and many other things. When you understand this significance, it recalls to mind all the beautiful teachings. Then when we share the Dhamma, that is where the Dhamma, which are beautiful teachings that give rise to understanding, that can allow us to develop wisdom, to liberate our mind, to free our mind from suffering. Then we understand life, the secret of life, then we know how to live life. So Dhamma is so beautiful. Then with wisdom, automatically we become virtuous. We are incapable of evil or negativity. So that's how we transform. Then we learn from the teaching how to develop the meditation, how to arise the pure mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind, how to realize the true mind. We develop the spiritual faculty, satta, virya, leading to sati. Sati is mindfulness, awareness before the knowing. Stabilize it to become samadhi. Then with sati and samadhi, we see things as they are, clearly developing the wisdom, the understanding. So all these are very beautiful. So this is the part that I want you to understand. To learn the teaching actually is not easy, but because we have the sasana now, it can be relatively easy. And when you know all the significance which I have explained just now, then you appreciate the teaching. That's why you see the beauty in the Buddha Dhamma, how he structured the teaching, and how that teaching that has been structured in that way can actually let sentient being develop the understanding of his teaching and cultivate it with ease. Without you knowing it, it's already the cultivation. But you must have the understanding so that your faith is strong, so that your sadha drives you. When you see the importance of this teaching, the beauty of this teaching, you go all out. That's how you develop virya. So sadha leading to virya, and virya drive you to cultivate. That's how sati come about, the daily mindfulness. the training of the mind to be aware and mindful leading to heedfulness. All this follow that Noble Eightfold Path. All of the path factors are so beautiful. That's how the teaching can be developed and become beautiful. And cultivation is not difficult when you understand all this. All phenomena arise from the mind. This is very beautiful. This is exactly the teachings of the Buddha. Mind is a foreigner, all things is the same. So all phenomena arise from mind. All Buddhas reach enlightenment in this world. Confusion regarding the principle give rise to delusion. This is very true. Understanding of the principles give rise to wisdom. Wisdom is fundamental wisdom. Wisdom is fundamental to practicing the path. You need wisdom. But it's a chicken and egg story. Before you start the cultivation, you don't have the wisdom. So in a way, you will really need to start from somewhere. Then when you develop the wisdom already, then the way become easy. That's why I hear the author write, wisdom is fundamental to cultivating the path. Seeing clearly through the eye of wisdom, we start walking on the path. With clear eye and steady feet, we will reach our desired state. We look at note 16, see what does it write. Note 16, the footnote. This is the quote from the second chapter of The Profound Meaning of the Lotus Sutta. Oh, so this is from the Lotus Sutta, chapter 2, by Venerable Zi Yi. Okay, so they actually get this quote from there. So, okay, I will read on. One day, I walk out from my study at dawn, and all around me was wind and rain. Amidst the deluge of rain, the wind was shaking the trees. All I could hear was the sound of the fierce wind and the torrential downpour. The following day, also at dawn, I walked out from my study, and when I looked up, I saw a pale blue sky with white clouds. Infusing the sky was an orange red light. It was the color of daybreak, and the first ray of the sun were about to come out. The light was reflected by the clouds and the water vapor, creating very different shades of color. It was so beautiful, feeling a soft wind and no rain. I could hear the singing of the birds or the chippings of the birds and the breathing of the earth. Yeah, you can feel it. Like there is a rhythm. I could feel how vibrant and alive the land was. Both of these instances took place in the early hours of dawn and in exactly the same place. Yet the difference between the 2 days could not have been more extreme. Yesterday and today are 2 different days. Yet when we look at the clock now, it reads exactly the same as it did at this time yesterday. However, it is clearly not the same moment in time. And this is easy to understand. So we need to use other skillful means or methods to express the difference between the two. In fact, can any particular moment really be called now? When only a second later, what we had just called now will already be in the past. This is simply how the world works. Time continuously passes by and the world keeps revolving. Actually, it should be evolving. Revolving is the actual planet. But life goes on, evolving. These extremely subtle and imperceptible changes are called the aggregates of action. All material objects in the universe, including Earth and the other planets, are in continuous motion and do not stop for even a single moment. This is the Nietzsche's law and the state of everything in the universe. It is just that we ordinary beings are unaware of it, because without mindfulness, without awareness, you are not sensitive. That's why ordinary, he used the word ordinary living being or puttajana. You are unaware of all this, the present moment awareness and all this thing. And you cannot feel things, the pulse of life, the rhythm of nature, the vibration within nature. So all this, unless you are aware, you are sensitive, you cannot feel them. Most people use the thought, the mundane mind, to think. That is very, very limited. That is very, very insensitive. When you are with a thought, there is no clarity. When thought arises, you are lost in thought. You are preoccupied with what you think. That's why you can't be aware. But if you are aware within, then you are different. You have sensitivity. You can understand many things. In our daily life, when everything in the world is running smoothly, it is not easy for us to recognize this time of good health and peace. This is what I mean, human beings take for granted. When you are without disease, without problem, actually that is the most beautiful moments of your life. Even when I'm sick or when I go to certain type of bodily, how you call it, bodily situation. Like sometimes you have certain very minor issue with your body. Then you appreciate how when your body is free of all this ache or rheumatism or wound or problems. So here the author wrote it very well. Where am I? It's not easy for us to recognize the good times, this time of good health and peace. To be able to be with the moment, having this joy, peace and understanding is actually very beautiful. You get to experience or you get to realize the pristine beauty and wonders of life within the moment. But human beings seldom have the ability to do that because they lack mindfulness, they lack awareness. They cannot be with the moment. When there is no problem, they take for granted. They just do what they like. Then when they get into trouble, they start to complain. They start to be afflicted and miserable, become miserable. That's what the deluded living beings are. But they can never really appreciate life. For me, I have always shared, when I'm alone, sometimes I feel at this age, when my health is still so good, physical body and mind states, everything, consciousness are still so good, it's really a blessing. Then you can really live life, be with the moment to experience so much things, the pristine beauty and wonders of life and all those things. So these are the what they call benefits of training your mind. Development of meditation to have the meditative state, then you can experience all this. Otherwise, you become heedless. You become afflicted. So I will read on, then you understand. Then we see what the author have to say. Eh? But as soon as something is not right, such as when the wind or rain is too strong, we immediately start to worry. Will this cause disaster, especially in Taiwan, typhoon? What makes people ill at ease are the working of their mind. Why is the mind ill at ease? Because when it comes to contact with external sense object or external mind state, if the external mind state is not harmonious, the mind also become less harmonious. So just as there are laws of nature, the human mind also follows certain law. We call that law of mind. Yeah? No matter what the law of nature are, or what the law of mind may be for us as human, everything comes back to how the environment influences our mind. There is a common saying, people's mind differ as much as people's faces. There are countless people in this world, and each one's appearances is different. It is the same with phenomena. All phenomena arises from the mind. If the mind is inclined towards goodness, now this is very true, then one's external action will express goodness. If it is inclined towards evil, through delusion, through heedlessness, then this will also be expressed through one's action and speech, and that evil inclination will be revealed. That's why mind is a foreigner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. So when you understand this, the opening verse of Dhammapada, verse 1 and 2, we will be very careful with our speech, action, and thought process. So we have to take care of mind. We need to develop mindfulness leading to heedfulness for us to understand. So the Buddha's advice is very simple. Isn't it? If mind is a foreigner of all things, mind is chi. When mind arises, all things arise. So what must you do? If we do not take care of mind, what will happen to us? We will suffer. We will be afflicted. Then Dhammapada verse 1 will take its course, like the Buddha's explanation. He said, if you are heedless, if you don't take care of mind, you will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. When you have that, suffering will follow you, like the wheel that followed the hood of the cart. So this is very obvious. If you want to be afflicted, miserable, then go ahead. Be heedless. Don't do anything. Don't train your mind. Don't develop the Dhamma understanding. Don't cultivate heedfulness. But when you understand this, then you know you hold the key to your own life destiny. To be happy or to be unhappy or miserable is entirely your choice. Then what must you do? You must have the wisdom to choose to be happy. That's why you must take care of mind. So if we decide to take care of mind, be heedful, be sensitive, be mindful, then what happens? Then we will act, speak, and think with a heedful mind. When you do that, you will act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind state that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And when you do this, the Buddha says, happiness will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. So to live life is very simple. Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, which do you choose? If you choose to be heedless, then don't do anything. Continue your old deluded way, heedless way, then suffering will follow you. Then don't blame anybody when suffering arises, when affliction arises. But if you decide to change your life for the better, then train your mind. Develop mindfulness, heedfulness, keep your precept, take refuge, cultivate wholesomeness, avoid all evil to good, then purify your mind following the advice of the Buddha. And then, Dhammapada verse 2 will take its course, then happiness will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. Means you are constantly happy, blessed and beautiful. So Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, the twin verse, the first two verses of the 423 Dhammapada verses, these are evergreen truth that the Buddha has proclaimed. They are the most important. That's why both also start with mano, mind, mundane mind. Our mundane mind is the forerunner of all things. And mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So if we act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then happiness will follow us, like the shadow that never leaves us. This is Dhammapada verse 2. So avoid Dhammapada verse 1, avoid being heedless. Embrace Dhammapada verse 2. Train your mind to be heedful, to be mindful, and cultivate sincerely, following the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil, to good, and purify your mind. Attend Dhamma class, listen to Dhamma sharing, straighten your view, do all the things that you need to do, rejoice, do more wholesomeness, be sincere, be truthful, cultivate generosity, dhanaparami. So all this will be very useful, very helpful. So if you can do all this, you will become beautiful, means you are following the advice of the Buddha. You will have the good life. So the teaching is really very simple when you understand. In their willfulness and stubbornness, sentient beings have planted evil causes and created negative karma. This is Dhammapada verse 1, leading to painful retribution. You reap what you sow. So naturally, they suffer. They become afflicted and miserable. Some sentient beings are responsible for deliberately committing evil deeds in the past life, in their past lives, and are now suffering the retribution of those actions in this life. Others are quite stubborn in this lifetime. The working of their mind have gone off track. Huh? So they need the Dhamma to guide them and help them adjust their mind. Only then will they stop creating negative karma. The Buddha could not bear to abandon the sentient being, so he manifested the appearances of engaging in spiritual practice and reaching enlightenment. He made a vow to attain Buddhahood for the sake of sentient being. So this is Mahayana, the greater vehicle. The great vehicle. Therefore, all Buddhas reach enlightenment in this world. Away from the human realm, there is no Dhamma to practice and no Buddhahood to attain. This idea is at the heart of all the Buddhist sutras and discourses. So our human realm is very special because everything you can witness here, you train your mind properly in accordance, you can become Sammasambuddha. If you do not train your mind and become healers, you can fall to the deepest hell. So that is what the human realm is all about. In Hokkien they say tua ho tua pai. It is also in the human realm that there are so many suffering, yet stubborn sentient beings who are thoroughly defiled and therefore in need of bodhisattva to save and liberate them. That's why you need Bodhisattva to save and liberate you. Bodhisattvas put the teachings of the Buddha into action. That's why they are beautiful. They take the Buddha's heart as they live out the Dhamma in this world, diligently advancing in their cultivation as they transform sentient beings and relieve their suffering. Thus, Bodhisattva can attain the ultimate goal of reaching the state of Buddhahood. When they do their work, they perfect themselves to become Sammasambuddha. Confusion regarding the principle gives rise to delusion because sentient beings are stubborn. They are deluded in their thinking and constantly give rise to delusion and create negative karma. This is very true. Understanding the principle gives rise to the wisdom. If we understand the principle, then naturally we can develop our wisdom and dispel our delusion. Wisdom arises from compassion. Thus, we need to simultaneously exercise compassion and wisdom on the Bodhisattva path through this world. This is the method of our spiritual practice. Okay, we stop here. Huh? We stop. So we will now open up for our second session, Q&A session. You can report your meditation if you want, then I will guide you. Or you can ask me any question regarding the Dhamma. Yeah, Peggy Koo. Peggy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
It's my first day at training this mantra.
Don't worry. Everybody has their experience.
First time I try.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
So from now I know, so I can follow every.
Oh, very good, very good. Do you have any question or meditation to report?
My meditation is still not so stable. I don't know why. Every day I try meditate, but still I can do about 25 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes, sometimes more, but I don't know why I still have to go back to the method you teach.
Oh, no problem. You can use that. Mind sleeping method, isn't it? Use it. Yeah, that is very useful.
I always have to use that method.
Yeah, you use it first for the
fun. I try not to use, but I just try to focus on Buddha and then just say, may I be well, may I be happy.
Oh, that one is metta. The mind sleeping method is supposed to combine with metta. That will calm down your mind. Help to decondition your heedless thinking, then you become more quiet. And then only you start the anapanasati or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Mindfulness
so
meditation.
I still continue with the
mind sleeping method. Okay. Yes, you know why.
I always have to do that. I don't understand why. Every session I have to do that.
Yeah, you listen. I explain to you again. You listen. Yeah, this is recorded. So by tomorrow morning, you can listen to it again. For normal people, their spiritual faculties, they are not stable. Do you know what are spiritual faculties or not? The five spiritual faculties?
Yes, Sada, Virya,
Very good. Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. If they are not strong, not stable, the opposite five mental hindrances will arise. So this mental hindrance, as you know, they are sensual desire, ill will, sleepiness of mind, or sloth and torpor. Then the mind becomes restless. Restless of mind means they think a lot, they worry a lot, and there's a lot of heedless thinking that they cannot stop. And then there is doubt. Doubt means you lack faith. So your mind is not calm, not peaceful. So because of the mental hindrance, the person cannot meditate because what are mental hindrance? Mental hindrance are mind state. Just now the five mental hindrance, they are mind state that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. So what is meditative state? Meditative state is the silent mind, the peaceful mind, the tranquil and still mind that is without thought. That is the meditative state. So to meditate is to realize that That's why I say you just relax, maintain awareness, then let the thinking slow down, then you will realize that silent mind. And it's so easy. But most people cannot, because they need something to do, otherwise their mind wanders off. They think a lot. They become heedless. This is what heedlessness is all about. Because when the mental hindrance are there, they cannot actually make their mind calm and peaceful, because there are hindrances still around. So you need to either develop the spiritual faculty so that the mental hindrance is gone, and straight away you will have Sada Virya Sati. Your mind become silent, peaceful, meditative. Then you can just continue with the meditation and you will progress. But not everybody can do that. So before your spiritual faculties are developed, your mental hindrances are still there. So you go and do the mind sweeping method. From your forehead, you start. You feel, you don't think. You feel, relax. Any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you relax into it. So when you feel and relax, you are actually deconditioning the heedless thinking, because you don't think anymore. You just feel, then you relax into it. So when you sweep through your body all the way down and up, your mind become peaceful. Then when it comes to your facial muscle, you can also radiate metta, combine with metta. Like just now you try to recite, but you recite with understanding. When you say, may I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel your body and mind be well and happy. You must have that feeling of well-being and happiness inside your mind state. If you don't do it accordingly, as per instruction, you will miss a lot of things. Then you find that you will experience what you experience now. Every time you try to meditate, you can't do it for long. For those who already know how to meditate, half an hour is very fast, like not enough. Then 45 minutes to 1 hour maybe suit them more. But when you know how to meditate, your meditative mind can be in that state throughout the day. It's not only about half an hour or 45 minutes or 1 hour. They can really relax, silent for the whole day. So this is what meditation is all about. Huh? Hopefully, this instruction or repeat of the explanation can help you. Okay, Peggy?
Okay. Thank you.
You go back, remember, tomorrow, listen to this again.
Okay.
Is there any other question that you might want to know the Buddhist answer from the Buddhist point of view? Any question you may have?
I try to every morning chant the retreat. Ajahn Achalo give the book on the dedication of all the offerings. Right up to the morning chanting only.
Okay.
And
do
then
you have any question or not?
I understand because it's all they have English ma.
Correct. Do you have any question?
Oh.
Do you want to ask anything?
The more I chant, the more I get to understand better.
Yeah, you can do that to develop the faith or the thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think
because you like to chant, yeah.
No, not to say I like to chant. I think it's a matter of routine to do it.
Yeah, it's the same. When you like to do it until it becomes a routine, because this one will give you faith. Understand? The chanting is a recollection of all the spiritual teachings and the important spiritual explanation of all the things we do under the teachings. Sometimes it may be the puja offering chanting, then it may be the salutation to the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha. Then sometimes it could be certain type of chanting. Metta Sutta or whatever. Then Ajahn Achalo is very good at chanting because his voice is very suitable. And a lot of people like his voice. And yeah, he has this very nice mixture of Western and Thai. Yeah.
Today's teachings give me a lot of impact. Yeah.
Mm, Sadhu.
Especially on the Dharma waters, how our mind need the Dharma water to our mind need Dharma water to as a nutrients to us.
We need Dharma water to saturate it with Dhamma, so that the Dhamma seeps in.
And it ties in with recently I did a lot of Hui Guang Fan Zhao.
Oh, very good.
Reverse the light. Last time the light is always outside.
Yeah.
Now it's inside.
Yeah, last time our senses are all outward. Yeah. So that's why we only look outside. We never go in and retrospect within our emotion, our thought process, how all the defilement, the subtle defilement, the gross defilement, the emotion, everything. You never see inside. That's why you never reflect. Then you cannot understand how we stir our mind, how we become afflicted, how we become fearful, insecure. This is all internal. Nothing to do with outside. But the world is so funny. The little people blame outside. That guy make me angry. But actually, anger comes from within. You stir your mind, you react, you have wrong view. You cannot accept him for what it is. So when you reverse the light, Hui Guang Huan Zhao, you start to see all this. It's not outside. It's not other people. It's you yourself with the wrong view, reacting, stirring, doing all those funny things. And all this happened because delusion has not been rooted out. You have not developed the understanding, the wisdom, the observation, the silent mind to see, to observe, to understand, then to straighten our view. That's why the initial wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara, is not there. So this is very beautiful, Adeline. Yeah, you continue, huh?
Yeah, exactly like what Brother Tim is talking. Always last time, you only see others, we never see ourselves, you know? Yeah. And when the beginning of cultivation, so, you know, we hear this, hear that, and then we start to have all this expectation, you know?
Yeah.
Even in the meditation, we are trying to achieve something.
So
nowadays, my meditation is just sit down, don't do anything, just relax. Now the understanding of relax is even deeper and deeper.
Yeah. More stable already, more deep already. You have the understanding, you become very patient. Means you don't do anything, you just let things be. And that is the most beautiful way to relax. Relax means don't try to do anything, at ease. Let things be. Then you become very peaceful. Then you let go of everything in the sense that you don't hold on to anything. Understand? Not the one try to let go. That one is different. That one is wrong. You like completely free your body and mind. Yeah. Like you are a dead person. You completely relax. You cannot hold on to anything. You are like a dead person. So that one is really deep understanding to have the ability. That's why when I understand all those understanding after I develop the cultivation, I can just relax very fast and my body become very peaceful again and very quiet again. Sometimes when I need to do certain things like work or whatever, then you need to relax where you can feel it. Then when I relax, very fast. Sometimes I may just need to lie down for 5 to 10 minutes. I recuperate very fast, even after I have to do certain thing or attend to certain thing. But most of the time, you are very relaxed because you are mindful. You don't have to rush things. So all this understanding will deepen, like what you start to appreciate and understand. The relaxation is now deeper. Mm. Very good, Adeline. Continue.
Yeah, so nowadays it's like looking, you know, how the emotion, how the slight emotion will affect our feelings and all these things.
Uh-huh.
So we see it clearer and clearer how we...
Yeah, how it trigger off. From yeah. that slight reaction, then it become very strong. Because without you knowing it, the thought process, the habitual tendency, the views, the opinion, the conditioning, they start to move already. So this is what they call the defilement, the asavak, anusaya. They all manifest very fast. Because it's like habitual tendency that you have accumulated over the years, over time. Because your reaction to sense experience, like and dislike, all this has become habits, habitual tendency. So they have developed into latent tendency, very latent inside you. Asava means the very strong defilement waiting to erupt on you. When there is condition, it just surface and erupt, shoot out. So all this you start to understand, sometimes from a very minor thing. You just arise a wrong thought, it trickles off straight away. If your wisdom is not there, the initial wisdom, Uniso Manasikara, is not there, it cannot come out and prompt you. If it cannot come out and prompt you, you cannot nip it in the bud, it will proliferate and become very strong. That's how living beings become very emotional. Sometimes fear arises, unhappiness arises, insecurity arises. The emotion all stir up already. Oh, then they felt so bad, like they want to erupt out already. Then you can see all this. But as a cultivator, when you understand, when you reflect, contemplate, and develop the straightening of the view, when you have more and more acceptance, then you realize you are more and more at peace. When you are at peace, you are not agitated. Your mind does not react and stir like before. And then you will have more and more space between thought. That's how Sati Sampajana develop. Initially, you must have the step four, which is initial wisdom. Initial wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara, is very important. When initial wisdom arises, it will prompt you at the moment of sense experience. Then it will nip it at the bud and it will not move, it will not stir anymore. But initially, the momentum is still there. The habitual tendency is still there. So initially it stirs a bit, like the moment it stirs, you aware, then you understand, then it slows down. Initially you have to go through that one for a while. Then after that, later on, cannot really, we have the wisdom very stable already. Sankara anichang, they are just the way they are. The world is the world. People are just the way they are. Then you can accept, oh, that wisdom stabilized already. Straight away, it does not stir, does not react. Nothing happened. You just smile. And sometimes you can laugh away. That's how you go through the transformation. And then you become more and more at peace. More and more quiet, more and more tranquil. So today you brought out a very good sharing, Hui Guang Fan Chao. From there, you develop all this. Then you realize without Yoniso Manasikara, first, second turning wisdom, or penetrative contemplative wisdom, you cannot have the initial wisdom to guide you, to actually stabilize your mind, to help you straighten your view and not to react to sense experience the old way. This is how you root out habitual tendency. Without wisdom, you cannot. You need understanding, you need wisdom, so that you will not stir your mind, you will not react the way you do, and you will not do things the old way anymore. You become more and more heedful, more and more sensitive. When you are sensitive, you think for others. You think for the overall, the environment, everything. You no longer selfishly inward thinking, all about the ego, the self, no more. That's why this meditation is very beautiful. Mindfulness, awareness, straightening of view, yoniso manasikara. When they arise, you become very beautiful. You become so different. You transform. Then you know, oh, this teaching is really wonderful. Without this teaching, no way you can deal with all this. Mm. Sadhu, huh? Adeline, yeah, you can continue. Mm.
Yeah, exactly like what Bharati is explaining. Yeah, I experienced all this. I appreciate more and more about mindfulness. If without mindfulness, this mind is so terrible. It's just like everything is from the Indian scene.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it just... So, yeah. So become automatic.
Chen Hua always say, "Yinian zhi cha." You just one wrong thought, it take you to don't know what dreamland already. You deviate already. Yinian zhi cha. That's why he always say this. Fo gen zhong shen xiang cha yinian zhi jian. The difference between a Sammasambuddha and a deluded Puttacana is only a single thought of ignorance, the first one that manifests. And that one makes them the Puttacana. Whereas the Sammasambuddha has reversed all this, that single thought of ignorance no more, they perfected themselves and become the Buddha. So, Fo gen zhong shen xiang cha yi nian zhi jian. So, 意念之间 and 意念之差, a lot of different. So, very good, Adeline, Sadhu.
With that, I think with all the Hui Guang Fan Zhao, you will see, you understand yourself more, and then you also understand others more and more. So, you become more, how to say, compromise, you don't expect a lot from others. Yeah. You know, so life becomes simple and
very true. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just to add to that, when you understand yourself, you understand why people become deluded, why they can't turn around. Because in the past, before you had the Dhamma, you also were like them.
Yes.
Stubborn, rigid. Full of views, opinion, and conditioning, and you can't understand all this because the Dhamma is not there. But when you see yourself, when you understand yourself, you understand others, then you have love, you have compassion. Because when you understand yourself, you will know living beings is the way they are because there is delusion. Without delusion, their nature is very beautiful, pure. That's why I say when you see beyond form, beyond mind, that nature is the same. Their nature, our nature is the same. They also have Buddha nature. But they fall because they lack wisdom. They cling on to delusion, the ego, sakayaditi. So all this will transform you. Yeah, when you know yourself, when you understand yourself, you change. You become beautiful. You become compassionate naturally. No need to like purposely, oh, I must be compassionate. That one is thought-based, no use. The one that has the wisdom one become compassionate due to understanding. Because when they understand themselves, they can accept everybody for what they are because they know before they have the Dhamma, they were also the same. So you don't blame them. Just like what Jesus used to say, the people who crucified him, he can even say, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. See? Such word can only come from a wise person. When you are in the midst of torture, people torture you, torment you, crucify you, and yet you can have compassion and love to say such word, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. These are wise people. So Dhamma is like that. When you have, you become very naturally compassionate, loving. You cannot behave the old way anymore. It's like completely transformed your nature. Your nature becomes so different. That's why the Dhamma is such. When you awaken, you awaken one. You cannot forget that enlightenment. You cannot forget that understanding. Where there is a wisdom, there is not knowledge. And knowledge, you can be funny. But this is not knowledge. This is wisdom. That's why it's very different. Good. Sadhu, Adeline.
Yeah. Now it's like every day, you know, it's just like peeling off all our, you know, like the peeling off the onion, one layer,
yeah.
one layer.
Yeah,
only you have to walk every day, step by step, you know.
Yeah.
So now I don't look for a lot of expectation, achievement. Yeah. You know, just be patient with ourselves. I think correct. That is very
important. Ah, yes. No need to know, huh? Persevere, just do. Have faith, be sincere, just walk the path.
Yeah.
That's what that Dhamma is. Like Po Cheng, they all, even Ingbi, they all, many Kayamita song, they all, they know. Don't try to know. So this message takes so long for Kayamita to slowly understand it. So like Ingbi that they say, people who don't understand, they ask this question, hey, I do like that, can become enlightened. When? So all this got nothing to do with the cultivation. They never ask the right question. Am I sincere? Do I have the faith? Can I persevere? These are the ones that can make you enlightened. That's why Ingbi wrote it very well, very clearly. Instead, they go and ask funny question. Hey, sure, follow your technique, your method, can become enlightened. Cannot, they don't want. Yours vipassana, not vipassana, they don't want to learn. Very strange. That's why sometimes you're really amazed by the delusion that people have. So for those who know, they really now have the understanding. That's why when you have the understanding, you become different. You transform. Immediate transformation. Very good. Sadhu, Adeline.
Though it's not easy, really.
Not easy.
Yeah. All the delusion that we built up for 50 over years, you know, we have to slowly, you know, reverse.
Yeah, like you say, peeling the onion, layer by layer. Means keep on straightening your view. Keep on developing the understanding that all this will become beautiful. So when you got no more views, it's like you peel the banana stem at the core of it, at the center of it, it's empty. There is nothing. Then why do you want to have views and opinion? Why do you hold on to think rigidly? Why do you want to argue? Why do you want to be right? All this no more meaning. Because once the ego is extinguished, then who is angry? Who is emotional? Who wants to be right? So who is holding on to all these things? It's the egoic mind, the mundane mind. The true mind has none of all this because it understands form and mind is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon, no reality. So all this become very beautiful. So the teaching will just unfold beautifully. Good, Sadhu, Adeline.
Yeah, a lot of reading to do, like just now in the text.
Yeah.
Every day do the reading, one by one, pull out all the
correct.
All the problems, you know.
Yeah. So all the weeds.
Really
you have to remove all the weeds.
Yeah.
And after that, your garden become beautiful, orderly. You have space, you have clarity. You have scenery, you have beauty, you have order. Otherwise, it's in a mess, disorder. All the weeds simply grow. Then you step on it also, you can kena prick by the weed and all that thing. Then the weed actually overgrown your flower, your garden. So your garden is no more a garden. That's why you have to clean up your mind. Same as you clean up your garden. You have to remove the wrong view, the weeds and all those things. Then you have to actually nurture it. Your garden needs proper water supply, drainage. And you need to till the land and you need to really give the appropriate condition for the vegetable to grow, the plant to grow, then only you have a beautiful garden. Mm. So all this, as you cultivate, you understand. Where you till your own garden, you understand. That when you visit other people's properly well-managed garden, you will learn from them and you become like full of joy. Oh, you all. Actually, I can also do that because it's not difficult. But the idea didn't come to you because you didn't have enough Dhamma friends. You didn't have enough Kayanamitas who has the Dhamma. So when you meet all these people, it's like they've gone through already their cultivation. So they can guide you, they can share with you, they can actually cut short your training, your ability to train the mind and to develop wisdom and understanding. So the purpose of Kayamita is just to give you the sharing, the understanding and all these things. And Kayamitas are Dhamma friends that really walk the path of Dhamma and have the Dhamma. They are sincere cultivator great beings. Mm. Very good, eh? Sadhu.
Yeah, okay. The short video clip.
They are very useful.
This way, reverse the lights and shine within. Should watch again and again.
That one is very useful.
Personally, I listened to that for a few times.
Yeah.
And I was rejoicing because I just started to do all this, all those.
Oh,
and
Sadhu.
I read that.
Very good.
It was so beautiful. Yes, yes.
Today, we'll add to that thing. It makes it more complete because of the condition that you arise. Hmm. Many people, they can't really understand. But the short video is actually a summarized version. Because I don't have the time to explain in detail. Unless they go through the retreat version, the full version where I have more time to explain. There was one retreat, I think, we talked about the garden. Our mind is like a garden. How we actually should train the mind. Like looking after a garden. So that one is also very beautiful. At Cameron Highland, I remember. My daughter also came out to share, I remember. Then there was somebody who actually have a lot of this type of nice saying. What is the name of that person? Jay Shandy. He is not bad. He has that talented past to use all those words, those beautiful words. He said we should cultivate love and compassion instead of weeds and all those things. So we should actually do away with all the emotion and all those things. These are not conducive for a good mind. So it's just like the garden, you have to remove all the things that is not conducive for the development of a good garden. First, we have to remove the weeds and all those things. Then later on, we may even have to look at the soil. And sometimes certain type of very negative soil condition, we may need to replace them. So sometimes we need to add in topsoil, we need to loosen the earth, then the whatever fertilizer or what you need to use for certain type of plants, you may need to. Then you need to attend to it. Attending to it is like the daily mindfulness cultivation, the daily religious routine. You don't attend to it, it will not be in the state where you want it to be, because the weeds, the grass and all those things, the wild plant, they actually sprout very fast and they take over and invade your garden. It's like a house you don't take care for a month or two. It will be full of cobwebs and rundown and all those things. Even your garden is the same. So training of the mind, cultivation is the same. It's a daily activity. You have to do it constantly. ever mindful. That's why heedfulness is very important, constantly meditative. While you are going through the training, you have to do all this. Okay, I think we have to end, Adeline. Thank you so much. Everybody?
Yeah, brother, maybe I will end my session with a story.
Yeah, you summarize
that. That's what I heard from a monk.
Oh, okay, good.
Mahayana monks.
Oh, sadhu.
There's a lay person, laughing at them. He say, you're monks, Life is so easy, every day just chanting, and then just simple like that, so free. Whereas we are lay person, we have to work, we have to earn money, we have to do so much thing. And the monk answer this lay person, say, for us, 24 hours, we have to watch our mind. Every action, speech or thoughts, we have to act. We have to watch it. So our job is 24 hours. Just a sharing,
Sadhu. That's why when people don't understand, they comment. So there's a saying, to comment is like no need to pay money. In dialect form is what? Kongwa menpun, something like that. To comment is easy. But when you don't understand, you can really be deluded and heedless. Because a lot of people used to have that mentality. Last time in my hometown, because there is this once a while thing, a tendency or say some family, their children has become monk. So a lot of these local people, they can't understand. And the comment sometimes really, you really can be shocked by what they say. They say, only lazy people want to become monk. We have no need to work. Food is there. Got people give offering, everything. Then live the monk's life. Easy going and all those things. Because these people don't understand. Then certain parents, when they heard their children becoming monk, they very, very against. Especially the family got only one son, the only son. They say, no more descendant, no more descendant in the sense that no more son to continue the, you call what? The lineage or whatever. So, depend on the society. When you are with the Indian society or Ceylonese society, Sri Lanka society, actually when they have one of their siblings going for, the family rejoice. Like Chief Reverend K. Sri Damananda, last time he used to share when he was young, he was taken in and he renounced and become a monk when he was very young, because the uncle ordained him money. And at first he was telling the parent, is it, you all still need my care. Actually he wanted to take care of them. So he talked to the mother, but the mother was so wise. The mother said, if you don't become monk, you become very full of piety. You only take care the two of us. But if you become monk, you take care of the world. You take care of all sentient beings, humanity. See the greatness in her thinking. Because they believe it brings forth great merits. They contribute to the world. You serve the world instead of only your parents. So that was the very beautiful ideology that I heard. And it really moved me to tears, because it was so beautiful. So there is a lot of way to look at things, because when you understand the synergy, the Sakyamuni Sangha. There's a synergy between lay people and the Sangha. As the Sangha, you need to be worthy of offering respect, hospitality, and medicine. The four requisites, you have to earn it. It's not what people think. But of course, society is such, there can be a lot of abuse too, because not everybody is truthful and sincere. That's why sincerity is very important, faith is very important. And without these two as a driving force, you cannot cultivate. You cannot become what you are. Okay, very good.